Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to the Brain Injury Radio Network with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at braininjuryradio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook.
Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Fugerski.
Hi, and welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Fugerski, and I am your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sunday of every month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. So you can listen throughout the world, just adjust your time zone. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain injured person, or anyone who with any interest in learning more about brain injury. I say every time, brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere, and it does. So the Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. But most folks don't even know about brain injury. I know I never did, not until it came to live on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks understand what survivors and caregivers experience. On the third Sunday of each month, I interview brain injury survivors or caregivers to see how they traverse their world of brain injury. I host therapists, medical professionals, and authors to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And on the first Sunday of the month, like today, I host a discussion panel to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury, such as depression, a neurofatigue, anger, or various symptoms of brain injury, and there are many. For those of new to my show, here's a little snippet about me. I came on the brain injury scene in 2005 when my husband David had a brain injury. You can learn more about that on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And this is the place where I always remember to say, please have a pencil and paper ready because I will be throwing out URLs that you might want to check in on after the show. So that, again, that was survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. It's all one word, all lowercase. And I'll probably be throwing that one out several times during the show. So if you missed it, you'll get it later. But I shared David's and my story in 4 episodes on this very show, starting in August 2014, the last of which in November of 2014 featured a discussion with David himself. So we got not only the caregiver perspective of David's brain injury, but we also got his perspective, which was really interesting, quite different. And the same. So it's, you know, the same but different because obviously he's looking at it through the survivor's eyes as I look at it through the caregiver eyes. On April 19, 2020, right after the pandemic began, David did a show with me using his perspective on brain injury, again, 15 years later at that point. And because he is a retired professor of microbiology, I wanted to delve into his perspective and understanding of the COVID-19 pandemic. So you can find my archived shows on my blog at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just click up the On the Air show menu. There are two on the airs, but you want the show menu. under the tab category section on the right sidebar. And it's really, that's really easy. Or you can type David Figurski in the search box on the right sidebar to learn more, because you'll see a lot of things that David has contributed to the blog, mostly through the COVID-19. So there's a section there that you can find just about COVID. So you can read our complete story in my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, which was published by Right Life Publishing, and it was released in November of 2018. But you can find Prisoners, as I so fondly call it, as an ebook and as a print book at all your local book haunts. I hope to have, well, I don't hope, I actually do have. I have the audio version of the book completed, and it, you can find that on Amazon or Apple or iTunes if you want to listen to the story. So, yeah, check it out. Check it out, please, and read it, and then let me know that you read it. I'd be really fun to hear what you have to say. So go to my website, DonnaFigurski.com, to learn more about me. You can also learn a whole lot more about my book, and lots of links there to where you can pick up the book. So I hope that you're going to find my show tonight fun and informative, and I hope that you will visit the shows of the other hosts on Brain Injury Radio. There are shows every night between 7 and 10 p.m. Pacific Time, and on the weekends you can tune in at 5:30 on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays to listen to your favorite shows too. So Brain Injury Radio airs across the United States and in 36 countries. So tune in somewhere, anywhere, and sit back now and relax and enjoy the show. So tonight's show is going to be about the importance of a good attitude coupled with gratitude. Those are two very, very important aspects of brain injury and caregiving. But when you think back on your life, how many times have you taken things for granted? If you are anything like me, and about 99% of the people, our population, probably a lot. Life is busy. We all know that. Many times, probably most times, I would say, it's frenetic for most of us. Our jobs, caring for our families, our spouses, children, elderly parents, daily errands, bills, the list goes on and on and on, and can get in the way of stopping us from being thankful for the good things that we have in life. I not only oversee my life and make sure things around me are running smoothly. Did I say smoothly? Sorry. That was a joke. When do things ever run smoothly? I am always up against some kind of deadline, some kind of pressure. Aren't we all? You know, but as the caregiver for my husband, David, who had a traumatic brain injury in 2005, had three brain surgeries in less than 2 weeks, and wasn't expected to survive any of them, well, life is a wee bit more busy. So still, as busy as it is, David and I often stop to reflect on where our lives have taken us. We often reflect on how things could be worse. Okay, there are not great after brain injury. Nobody's life is really going to be great after a brain injury. And after all, with David's life, his brain injury stripped him of many of his physical abilities. He has difficulty walking, talking, eating, swallowing, using his right hand, and he has issues with bladder regulation. And that's enough to send anybody down the path of despair. But tell me what good. Yep, what good would it do, him or what, or me? What good would it do to wallow in all that unfortunate, no, downright horrible things that his brain injury inflicted on him? Let me tell you, it would do no good at all. And it would take me down a dark and slippery slope. So we try to focus on the good. Or as, if you're old enough, you might know the singer Perry Como, when he croons, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. You have to be over a certain age to probably remember that song. He's an oldie. And I know it's not easy to only look on the positive side when life gives you lemons. But lemonade is better than bile. So I'm going with the lemonade. I'll just add some sweetener to it. What about you? You know, think about that. Because you get to make the choice. On tonight's show, survivors Jamie Crane Mosey and Barbara Wilson join me to talk about the importance of having a good attitude coupled with gratitude. And here are two ladies that absolutely do have that. But before I welcome them to the show, I want to tell you a little bit about each of them, my panelists. So we'll start with Jamie tonight. Jamie Crane Mosey grew up on the ski slopes. By 18 years old, Jamie had won junior world championships and moved to Utah to continue training as a professional slopestyle and half-pipe skier. However, in 2015, Jamie crashed at the World Tour Finals, went into a coma, and became paralyzed. In an instant, Jamie went from being one of the world's best slopestyle skiers to relearning basic motor skills like walking upstairs and riding a bike. Jamie didn't let this horrific accident keep her down. Instead, she worked to recover. Leaning on her friends and family for support, she charged forward with optimism. Jamie is currently studying neuroscience at Harvard and works as a celebrity ski guide, competition coach, and ski coach. Jamie enjoys skiing, doing yoga, Pilates, rock climbing, and mountain biking, but not all at once. So you can learn a little bit more about Jamie on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Just find the search button on the right sidebar and type her name in. Jamie, if you just put in Jamie, J-A-M-I-E, you'll get a lot of things on the blog that Jamie is responsible for. So, she's done a survivor speak out there. Jamie was a host on the Brain Injury Radio Network for several years, and you can find her shows on the Brain Injury Radio Network, or you can go to my blog and see where she's done. Well, not so much there. No, you do have to go to the Brain Injury Radio Network and type her name in the search box. Because she will only be on my blog for things that we did together. So, yeah, so I'm always happy to welcome Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm always happy to have you on the show, Jamie. You know what? I heard some good news happen to you on a mountaintop recently. Do you want to share that news with the world?
Yes, it did. On April 11th, as you mentioned, my accident was in 2015 on April 11th, which closed the chapter of my professional ski career. And then it's been 6 years since then. And this year on April 11th, which also happens to be my boyfriend at the time, Reggie, his birthday. So it's his birthday and my rebirth day. And we climbed up a mountain for my rebirth day. And we had a photographer because it was my rebirth day, so for the celebration of climbing an alternative peak, which I talk about. And then at the top, he knelt down and said he wanted to spend the rest of his life with me and gave me a ring. And I was so happy, and I started to cry because he proposed at the top of the mountain.
That's awesome.
That is wonderful. That's so memorable. And I have chills. And I already knew this story, but I still have chills. So congratulations to Jamie and to Reggie. Do we have a date set yet?
Thank you very much. Well, we're kind of flexible about dates because of COVID. We have an idea. We're thinking about maybe next Memorial Day. Because around that weekend, because we want to have a destination wedding in Whistler, actually in the middle of the mountain, right below the run that changed my life. And and I actually was planning this wedding before I had a partner that I wanted to get married. Jeannie, actually, my sister. she loves weddings, and she was like, it would just be, and I love like corny, cute, sappy things, and I was like, oh my God, it would be perfect to go back to like start my new life with my partner, like a new chapter of that where the old chapter ended. And then I have now he's my fiance, my partner Reggie, and he loves to snowboard and he loves to be at the mountains just as much as I do. And he's like, okay, sounds great. I get to go up in Whistler, Memorial Day is not a holiday. So all of our friends would have 3 days off work. And in Whistler, it's the springtime, so it's not super crowded. The glacier is open, so we can go skiing. Yeah, I can wear a dress to the wedding without being cold. And so we'd like to do that, but I am really set on having it in Whistler, and I know that things can change, and especially with COVID or a traumatic brain injury, things change in the blink of an eye. So I'm trying not to be too caught up on the timeline, but be flexible, because until it happens, you can't confirm that it's actually going to happen. And at the same time, once you get engaged, you need to start planning a date for a wedding. But it might all change. So,
you know, and that's just so typical of anybody living with a brain injury. We all, not me because I'm as a caregiver, but brain injury survivors do have to take that into consideration so often, is the, you know, the change that can happen in a blink of an eye. So thanks for sharing that, Jamie. That was really a lot of fun. And I want to introduce Barbara Wilson here, who's waiting patiently. And Barbara, while working as an agent for the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, in the BSA division, the Banking Secrecy Act, it sounds like they use a lot of acronyms there, a lot of letters of the alphabet that most people don't even realize what they are. IRS, I think most people will get, but the other one I'm not so sure. But Barbara dealt with money laundering, terrorist activity, and human trafficking. Wow. But sadly, Barbara Wilson also was exposed to poisonous chemicals in the form of pesticides while at her job. It took several days of exposure before Barbara realized the gravity of her problem. And over a two-week span, Barbara's symptoms intensified. Shortness of breath and cognitive issues sent her to the emergency room. For more than 12 years since 2009, Barbara has been trying to overcome the difficulties that her brain injury presents to her. Again, find this if you want to learn more about Barbara on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. Find that search button. And again, just put Barbara's name in, Barbara Wilson, W-I-L-S-O-N, and you will be able to find out. It's on the Survivors Speak Out. She did an interview there, which is a written interview. But you can also listen to Barbara on my show about anoxic brain injury, and that's under the category of the on-the-air show menu. So we already talked about how to get there, but scroll to May 7th. And you'll be able to hear a very fascinating story. And Barbara is not a stranger to our panelist group, because she has been on many shows. So if you put in Wilson, you're going to find several shows that Barbara has been involved in, and you might want to listen to more. So welcome, Barbara. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you, Donna.
It's so much fun to see you here, you know, be able to get to back talking to old friends again. So let's just jump right in then, and I have some questions for you both. So let's just start with, basically we know that brain injury has touched each of our lives. You know, Jamie, Crane Mosey, for you, it reared its ugly head on the slopes. And Barbara Wilson, you were just doing your job, completely unaware of the danger lurking around you. And, of course, I'm on the other side of the fence of brain injury as a caregiver for my husband, David. But I'm going to take a wild guess and say that each of us would probably turn back the hands of time and erase the brain injuries if we could. I think each of us would have taken another fork in the road, given the choice. But alas, our paths are set, not in stone, though. but in shifting gravel. And I was going to do shifting sand. I was thinking shifting sand, but I was thinking, well, sand is soft and gravel is rough. So I like the idea of shifting gravel because brain injury is rough. And so I thought that would be a good analogy for that. But I guess we each have a lot to be sad about with the turns our lives have taken, with the things that brain injury has dramatically affected and changed in our lives. But we also have a lot to be thankful for. It's the attitude of gratitude that gets us through. So I want to talk about that. So I want to let this conversation begin. And Jamie, we're going to start with you. And then, Barbara, you can just pop in as you wish. But how do you feel about the attitude of gratitude?
Well, I think gratitude is very important. And it's actually interesting because, honestly, I'm actually kind of grateful to have my traumatic brain injury because my life as a professional skier changed. And I did go through a lot of time for years when I felt like I was lost. I didn't have any goals, dreams, and visions. Yet now I have so much opportunity to help people with brain injury. I am a board member on the Utah Brain Injury Council, and I'm involved with Medicaid, and I was just doing a workshop on person-centered training, which is a really vital thing for the first responders and the medical staff in traumatic brain injury centers and hospitals to pay attention to, and to be able to have this much of an ability to have an input on it and a life career develop, I actually feel fortunate that I went through the trauma and I worked really hard and a lot of people supported me and allowed me to get to this point. And I'm kind of actually grateful for my brain injury.
That's interesting, and I want to get to that to expound on that a little bit more, but because I knew you were going to say that, because we've talked about things like this before and different things, and so I knew that that was going to be your take on this. So I want to get back to that in a few minutes, but I want to hear what Barbara has to think. What are your thoughts, Barbara?
I think a lot of it is that I have learned within myself to gain more strength. I never knew how strong I would become after having a brain injury. I get what Jamie says. Sometimes she was happy to have a brain injury. You know, of course, the world, total world changes. But I've learned how to build boundaries that I had never really learned before. Especially when it comes to the medical profession, you have to learn to stand up for yourself.
Yes.
A lot of that came upon with having the brain injury. But you are just blessed that you are here. You really know what you went through. You know the struggles that your body has gone through. You know the continuation that you're going to be. You didn't mention, but, you know, Jamie, with the chemicals, it's turned into MS now. So you know life will be a struggle. You meet different and wonderful people in the field with brain injuries. So there is a lot of gratitude there.
Okay, go ahead, Jamie.
Well, we actually ran the Mo Crazy Strong, ran a Heal the Healers campaign for caregivers. It's on Brain Injury Alliance of Utah's YouTube channel, and there's 10 videos we produced. And one of the big things that we are talking about is the power the caregiver has and the individual if they recover back to the stage where they have power. The caregiver has, because a lot of times when you're told by the medical staff, like Barbara mentioned, you have to learn how to set boundaries and understand. Like one of the people one of the workshops we put out was saying how she thinks that this, like, well, what she studied, that her therapist should do this with her daughter, not that. And then I thought, you say it. Have a conversation. Talk to the people and discuss it. And ask, one of the things we have in the video is ask, why are you telling me this? Why are you suggesting I do this? And not because you're being critical and not because you're trying to undermine them, but be aware and think about everything and ask questions. And there is sometimes, like, my older sister is, she happens to be an anesthesiologist, which is a different form of being a doctor, but she was in the hospital when I was in a coma, and she was my primary care physician, so she made the rounds and was there every time the doctors were there. And she changed. She suggested and had them change how much of a sedation dosage they were giving me, because half my body was thrashing, so they were calming it down. It was actually a natural coma, but there was obviously lots of drugs involved in it, but it was came on naturally. But so she had them lower the drugs because she was like, excuse me, you're having drugs for a 200-pound person, and my sister is 110 pounds. So this is not how it should be. And they lowered it, and then I woke up. And so just to think that, like, just doctors are really smart, and I have they're super smart and really highly trained, but question everything and learn how to set your boundaries and learn how to set your limits, and with everything be active.
Yes, and that's really that's very good advice. And most people don't know how to do that. It's hard. It's hard to stand there and question a doctor who looks like he knows everything in the world. But you have to do that. You have to be able to stand up for, as a caregiver, up for the person you are advocating for. And I learned that pretty quickly in the hospital on a number of occasions where I had to come down hard. And to tell a doctor, no, you're going to do it this way. And tell a social worker, no, I'm not doing what you're saying. It's wrong. You know, and it's not, that's not me. That isn't the way I am. I'm usually one that wants to go with the flow and make it easy. But when you know that something is not right, you have to do it. And so, yeah, if it's borders that you're breaking, yeah, you've got to do it, you know. So I get totally what you're saying there. And, you know, it's surprising because now I wasn't sure what Barbara was going to say to that question, but I'm hearing a very positive attitude on your side too, Barbara. And surprisingly, there are many survivors who are happier after their brain injuries. And that just truly boggles my mind. It really does. It astonishes me when I read a survivor's speak out interview on my blog. And one of the questions is, do you feel your life is better or worse after your brain injury? And then they go on to tell me how much better it was. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's crazy. And I looked at some of them and collected a few here because I wanted to just share. But one survivor wrote, I'm looking forward to the second chance to fix past mistakes. You know, wow, that's very progressive thinking. Another survivor wrote, excuse me, my life may have changed for the better. I think I'm a much more patient and caring person now. What introspective thinking that is. And yet another one wrote, excuse me, I have this little tickle in my throat. In just a moment, I'm going to do it. I just muted myself there so I didn't have to share my cough with the world. It was just a little tickle that was getting on, just aggravating. So another person wrote, certain aspects of my life are better. I have more of an appreciation for what life has to offer, and I'm more optimistic about what can be achieved. And another one wrote, this is a friend of mine, said, I'm still working every day on my recovery, but I know through this fire I will become a better human being. And for David and for me, I know we wish we'd never had heard the word brain injury and never had that happen to our, you know, to David in his life. But since it is a huge part of our lives, we're going to latch on for the wild ride, you know, because it really is a wild ride, like roller coaster, twisting and turning with its steep ascents and devilishly dropping descents. So hang on and do the best you can. And that's basically all we can ask for. And that sounds like with you, Jamie, you have grabbed on and are helping other people because of what you've learned through your brain injury. So you're making the lemonade out of the lemons, and that's wonderful. And I just want to ask you, and this wasn't really planned, but I mentioned earlier that you were a host on the Brain Injury Radio Network, and I know you moved on to another channel. How is that going for you? And I'd like you to let people know where they can find you there.
Oh, thanks for offering that. My show is called Life Gets More Crazy, and it's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. So if you have an iPhone, you can just go on podcasts and search up Life Gets More Crazy and subscribe. And it's doing pretty well. There's a lot. It's gaining traction and attention, and I'm interviewing some really interesting people. So it's not brain injury, but it's anyone who's encountered a life-changing trauma and how they climbed an alternative peak. So how they looked at things creatively. So it gives you, whenever I interview people, one of the people I interviewed, he started a foundation called High Fives, and they've raised millions of dollars for supporting individuals who've had traumatic life-changing events in the outdoors to get back to being active and doing things like supporting their chiropractor or acupuncture, or for me personally, they financially supported my mental therapy and my massage therapy and my chiropractor work. So above and beyond what insurance covers for you to not just live, but be alive to thrive. And so I was interviewing the founder, and he actually had a spinal cord injury, and it gives me goosebumps listening to these people because they just think creatively and they figure out how to take a mess and turn it into a message. And I was actually going to say they know how to make lemon meringue pie. And so not even lemonade, but just all the way to the lemon meringue pie.
All right. Way to go. Put on that topping because that really makes it even better, doesn't it? So that's really cool. I'm glad you're getting your message out and taking your mess and making it into a good message. I caught that, and that was cool. So So I wanted to just go on to on the other hand, when we're talking about people surviving and doing well after their brain injuries, there are many survivors that aren't lucky enough to feel gratitude. Their lives have just been too drastically changed, and they often don't like the person they have become, and that's hard. They see the grass greener on their pre-TBI life, and frankly, it probably was, but no amount of wishing and hoping will make it go back to pre-TBI, and that brings to mind one young man who was in the hospital. He was on the ward with David in the rehab hospital, and he really was just maybe in his early 20s, but his brain injury had damaged his body so badly, and his mind, I guess, too, because he wasn't able to communicate at all. But his body was all crunched up in a way, you know, the curled hands and wrists and things like that, and no interaction at all from him. So I look at somebody like that who's had a brain injury, and I go, wow, how do they deal? How do you really deal with something like that? And now that's probably, that's one of the things we had another person on the ward who probably about a 50-ish-year-old woman who just all day long just kept calling, mommy, mommy, just letting it, you know, roll out long and long and long, and that's all she said all day long. And another man who was using the cuss words constantly to every single nurse or an attendant or just for no reason at all. And those people, I have to wonder, how are they ever going to get better? And how are they going to deal with life? And so, you know, no amount of wishing and hoping, as I said, is going to take them back to their pre-TBI life. So what are they supposed to do? I mean, we're talking about gratitude and attitude, but how can they feel gratitude and attitude? Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I actually have a really great quote from Wayne Gordon, which is just about this. People with TBI who want to engage in person-centered practice differ in many ways from people with developmental disabilities. A key difference is that people with TBI who want to move on after injury have to deal with who I was in addition to who I want to be. And so that is a huge individual struggle for TBI patients or people, TBI people to work on is you compare yourself to who you were. And one big thing that helped me at the beginning, because at the beginning of my injury recovery process, I had gone from being one of the best skiers in the world, traveling around the world as a professional athlete, going to after parties, living a pretty high life at the top of a mountain, and in a blink of an eye was unable to walk, swallow water, ski, had no motor skills. Like, it was a really big fall. And during that time, yeah, I had depression, and I had to work on fighting it because I would compare myself to who I was in the past. But the advice is to really stay focused on the present moment and stay focused on who you currently are and set little attainable goals and accomplish those goals. So instead of thinking about what you used to be and set a goal compared to or a big growth goal or a goal compared to who you were in the past, setting some little goals every day that are attainable, that means you can accomplish the next day with your current ability, helps you feel rewarded and more successful and significant, and really staying focused on the present and taking a moment to look at the view. So when you're in a struggle and you're feeling overwhelmed, take a deep breath and look at your surroundings and look at the view and just remind yourself to be thankful that you can look at the view.
Exactly. I think those are good. That's good. Good words to live by. Barbara, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of your TBI individuals, you're going to have to make those goals. You're going to have to set those goals. I know when I first got sick, those first 2 weeks, I really started going downhill and I could hardly walk. The pain was so incredible in my legs. I had to pretty much cut most of my hair off where I couldn't hold a blow dryer. I just started setting the small goals, like Jamie said, you know, try to walk through my house once or twice. And then finally, you know, months later, it got to where could you walk down to the half a block? Could you do this? Or, you know, when you walked outside and picked up after the dog, could you do a quarter of the yard one day? Could you do a quarter of the yard the next day? I mean, 5 years later, I still couldn't clean all of the house in one day. I had to take it in pieces by pieces. And I was just sitting here yesterday where my friend's coming in from out of town, and I cleaned my whole house. I cut all the grass, and I says, wow, you know, given that 3 years ago, I couldn't do all this in the amount of time that I did. So every day you grow as an individual with a TBI, and you have to look back and see that growth and be thankful for it and always know that down the road you're going to be growing more as a person and as far as your soul and your mentality. And you have to focus on that. Yes, there's been struggles, there's been obstacles, but look back and see where you have come from is very and extremely important. And keeping a journal of where your steps, where you've come from, I think is really important. And just having a good support team.
Yeah, I think all of that is really good advice too. And it's the focus is living in the moment, living with what you have now, but and not looking back, but looking back to see how far you have come, but not looking back to say, oh, geez, I wish that was my life now, because it's not, and it's not going to be. And I think that learning to recognize that and finding your new normal, and I think Jamie said it earlier, you know, just finding who, what, I think that was the quote, and I wrote it down, who was I and who do I want to be? So, yeah, that's exactly it. You, who were you before? And can you improve on that person? Or maybe that person has gone back. Maybe you've lost a lot after a brain injury. Most people do lose a lot after a brain injury. But you still have to look at yourself as a complete human being and trying to do your best in the moment that you have. And I think that is really, you know, those are things that are hard to come by. They're hard to imagine and make happen in your life, especially if you're feeling sad or woe is me kind of thing, you're not feeling good about yourself, you can look at all the bad and focus on that. But like I said, you don't want to have that bile in your life because that's really untasty. You know, so you want to improve your life in whatever way you can. And I think it's individual. Everybody has to do it his or her own way. But I think you've got to keep that door open. You've got to keep that light on and see how you can get to it, you know. So that's kind of, those are very, very interesting points. And I'm going to say, though David and I don't focus on his brain injury, it's directly in front of us. You know, there's no way you can forget that he had a brain injury because his is physical. You see it every day from the moment he gets out of bed to the moment he goes into bed. It's obvious he has a brain injury, whereas many people, I know Barbara and Jamie, neither of you look like you have a brain injury. And so people would find it difficult to even understand that you do or what's happening with you. But with David, it's really obvious. His difficulty with walking and balance and his swallow disorder, which makes him constantly cough and choke on his food, are impossible to ignore. I mean, they're there. I often ask David how he feels about his brain injury. And I'm actually always surprised at his response. No. He's not happy that he had a brain injury. He's not happy that his life is greatly restricted by that brain injury and that he's so reliant on me. I know that with no doubt he would trade this post-TBI life, former life, without a brain injury in a heartbeat, yet still he has an amazing attitude. He's happy to be alive, as you mentioned earlier. I don't know, what have you, Barbara or Jamie mentioned, you know, I think, Barbara, you said, you know, be happy to be alive. He rarely complains, which I find remarkable, you know, because I think somebody in a situation like that deserves to complain. But that doesn't mean you have to, David, if you're listening, and I know you are. So you don't have to complain. But but I could understand if he did, you know. So if it were me, I'm sure I would be nonstop complaining. Why me? Of course, I know that attitude would do me no good. I mean, cognitively and realistically, I know it would do me no good. And it would be uncomfortable for my caregiver, so which would be David. But maybe that is why David has adopted the attitude of gratitude. Or maybe he is smart enough to know that the nonstop complaining attitude would make life that much harder for both him and me, because he's a smart guy. So we just move on and grasp life as best that we can. We've introduced many of our pre-trauma activities back into our life, like our Friday night dates, but many activities David must make compensations for. For example, instead of running daily, he now uses his cat trike recumbent trike to ride 45 miles a week. He also uses his A-linker. He uses the bounce trampoline that we just got because he can't get outside during the pandemic, and the treadmill to get more access exercise. So it's all about making the best of a not-so-great situation, and it beats the alternative. So, Jamie, what do you do to not focus on your brain injury on a daily basis?
Well, some of the things to not focus on brain injury is to think about your habits in the morning and what habits you have, and add in some things that you want to be working on. So this is very important in recovery that it's all person-centered practice. And what that means is that it's dealt with each individual, and people recognize that every individual is different and every brain injury is different, because too often the therapy recovery programs just look at the statistics and give you a checklist mm-hmm. in black and white, and that really is not what you want. You want it tailored to you. So think about, ask yourself what goals you want, what dreams you have, write it down and make some plans, and then just focus on how you currently are, and like I said, setting attainable goals, and how will you get to that, and they don't really have anything to do with your brain injury. So, like, if you write down, like, one of my goals is to be able to walk around the block with my dog, and so then every day you practice going on a walk with your dog, and you see how far you get, and you recognize mm-hmm. that you will have relapses, and you will go backwards as you're going forwards, but just, you know, set those little goals and focus on that. But just doing little things like instead of always apologizing for yourself or saying, I have a brain injury, the language that you use to yourself matters a lot. So the language you use to your therapist, the language you use to your caregiver, the language you use inside of your mind to yourself matters tremendously. And so that says, so just the transition from going from being a patient to a person, just that little language shift mm-hmm. can make the outcomes completely different. So when you're talking to yourself, don't apologize for things in your mind. Don't degrade yourself. Don't talk to yourself mean because you forgot something and you can't remember something. Be like, oops, I just forgot. Like, humans forget, and they do. Humans do forget. So just let it wash over you. Don't stay stuck on the mistakes that you made, and in your mind write and focus on just some goals that have nothing to do with brain injury.
That's
some of my advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the attainable goals, setting attainable goals, things that you can do, taking one step before you take the second. You know, because you can't take 10 steps until you're able to take one, you know, and if you also want to make your goals reasonable, because then you will make them, you will meet your goals. If you make your goal too big, too high, you're going to get discouraged. You're not going to be able to meet that goal. So that you have to consider that. And the other thing I liked what you said was to, the language you use to yourself, you said. The language you use to yourself, I'm a patient or I'm a person. It's a very different language. And one is more positive. One puts you in a helpless situation. As a patient, you feel more helpless. But as a person, you have, I don't know what the word I want is, but you have authority over your own self. And so that's good too. And often I've heard people say, tell yourself out loud how good you are at something. Make it an affirmation that's a verbal affirmation. You're more likely to listen to it or write it down. You're more likely to believe it than if you just think it. So those are good points. Barbara, what are your thoughts on this too? You know, we kind of went off on this.
No, I think Jamie shared a lot of great ideas.
I am one of the world's worst about kicking my own hiney on things. My therapist and I are working on that. I can really beat myself up at times on things. I fight fatigue, extreme, which most TBI patients do, or you know, individuals. Mm-hmm. And they recently put me on a narcolepsy drug, which doesn't seem to be working as well as it was in the beginning. And so I tend to really have a hard time adjusting to not being able to get up and do as well as I, quote unquote, used to. So that is my beast of TBI. And so what I do is I set myself goals to do 3 things a day. If I can obtain 3 things a day, then I feel great about myself. Now, if it has to be get up in the morning and make a pot of coffee to do 1 thing, then that's 1 thing. Showering is 2. If I don't get the shower, then that's fine. Feeding the dogs, if that's the second one, then that's the second one. If it's taking out a bag of trash, then that's the third. At least I have rewarded myself that I have obtained 3 goals for that day. They may not be big to someone else, but they were big to me. I was able to get up and do something to where I felt like I accomplished something for that day. That's what I do. I start every day with 3, do 3 things. And that's just what has helped me a lot. My, you know, I guess you could say self-esteem.
Oh, no, go ahead. I thought you were through, and I was just going to say something, but go right ahead.
Oh, no, no. That's pretty much it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's,
oh.
Yeah.
Okay, then I was going to say I like that idea a lot about making goals and choosing 3 goals. Or 2 or 1 or whatever it is that you need to do. For Barbara, for you, Barbara, it was 3, and that worked for you. Somebody else it might not work for. They may have to just choose 2, and they may just choose 1. But setting yourself a goal and being able to attain it is so, it's so rewarding. I guess that's what it is. It's really rewarding. It's very affirming. It's like, I did it. Now, anything else that you did get done that day is frosting on the cake. You bake the cake with the 3, things that you chose to do, the goals that you've met, and then anything else is frosting. Because you're obviously going to do more things because you're going to get ready for bed. You're going to get dinners ready and everything, dinner for yourself or whatever. But, you know, so you have to give yourself attainable goals. Because if you give yourself 10 goals for that day and you don't get, and you do 9 of them, you're going to beat yourself up. You're going to say, oh, I didn't make my goal. You know, and why put yourself in that situation? I'm afraid as a caregiver, I do that a lot. And David is probably over there saying, yeah, you are talking to, you're saying things that you should be taking note of yourself. But, you know, I will put too many goals. And then even though I've accomplished 2 major goals for the day, if I didn't get the 3rd one done, I'm unhappy with myself. You know, and we have to give ourselves a more permission to just be normal. Just be, you know, accept yourself for what you can do. And I think that's important. So I think that, those are really good points that both of you brought up on here. Person-centered,
yeah, and
set it attainable goals, and don't beat yourself up. Go ahead, Jamie, I hear you.
Yeah, I was just going to touch on that a bit because everyone is their own worst critic. And
yeah.
I am my worst critic all the time. And it's something I've been working on, like, as I've developed and grown up in different ways. But beyond just if you're a caregiver or a brain injury, like, everyone is their worst critic. And instead of criticizing yourself, if you have
the confidence and you support yourself in your mind and you allow yourself, you can do accomplish so many more things. And like you said, that David saying you should listen to yourself, that is something that when I feel overwhelmed, because I do, I have days when I feel really frustrated and overwhelmed and like I'm not accomplishing enough. And then people will be like, well, a wise motivational speaker who speaks on resilience once told me, and then will spit my words back at me. And if you really pause and think about it, but just agreeing with that, that everyone is really hard on themselves. And so instead of feeling bad about being hard on yourself, try to, what I do is when I'm catching myself talking derogatory towards me or I'm feeling frustrated about something, I try to change the language in my mind to being more supportive and say something different. Like, even if I say like the exact same thing in my mind, but just a little change. So
yeah,
just change the words to be confident instead of degrading.
Exactly. We are, like you said, we're our own worst enemies. And we have, and we can change that. That's the thing. We can change it. We just have to put it into our heads to do it and actively work on it. It's not going to happen overnight, but you can make those things happen for you. But, you know, you just have to be aware of that you're doing it. Many of us aren't even aware that we're doing it, I think. And so, yeah, I think that's one of my things I'm going to be working on for the next couple of weeks and see how that works out. So, Jimmy, you mentioned writing it down, keeping a journal, and I think that's a ways to bring gratitude more to the forefront in your life might be to keep a gratitude journal, and each day write one thing that you are grateful for that day. Don't make it long because it's cumbersome, because then you're not going to want to do it, you know, and just date it and add a few words. And imagine the fun that you'll have reading those. After a specified time, you know, it could be, it could be a year or a month or just, but maybe you can read them on a day you are down and I imagine how uplifting they can be. And it's just, I think also another thing, you can make a project, from them even more fun and interesting, have the whole family do it. And in this example, each member should write their gratitude on a piece of paper and place it in a jar, not even in a journal. Have a gratitude jar. And then at the end of the week, set some time apart to sit down together and read each other's. I mean, you might have them color-coded. Blue will be Barbara, yellow will be Jamie, and pink will be Donna. You know, and maybe I pick all my pinks out and read them out loud. Or maybe Barbara picks my pink out and reads it out loud. You know, and so you're just kind of hearing what other people are thinking, and it starts good conversation, too. So I'm just wondering if any of you have ever done anything like that, or how do you think it would work with your families? Go ahead.
Yeah. I think those are some great ideas. And I've actually, a few times whenever I notice that I feel derogatory towards myself days in a row when I'm just feeling frustrated, I go back to it and I write down two things I'm grateful for that day and one thing I would like to focus on tomorrow, which goes back to our setting attainable goals type thing. So I talk about the two things I'm grateful for and one thing I'd like to do. And then usually if you focus on that and then you do it, you write it as something that you're grateful for that night. And then you can have something else that spontaneously popped up that you're grateful for.
Okay, now if you're writing it in a journal and you've accomplished something that you're grateful for, I would go, this is the teacher in me, the first and third grade teacher, I would go back after I saw that I did that, I put a little star next to it so that I know that I actually accomplished my goal. And, I mean, I loved gold stars when I was a kid, when the teacher would give me a gold star and I'd go home with it on my forehead. But now it doesn't have to be a gold star. It can
That's
be just
great.
A little star that you write, that you put in next to it. Because it just, again, it affirms for you. Like, look, I did it. I accomplished it. And you give yourself a little pat on the back with a star.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts? Yeah? Okay.
All right, so another thing I'm thinking is that too often survivors and caregivers don't express their gratitude to each other. Everyone likes to feel appreciated. Everybody. No one wants to feel used or taken for granted. And caregivers often give up their time and energy to the needs of their survivor. In many cases, it's because they want to. In many other cases, it's because of necessity. Either way, caregivers are grateful to know that their efforts are not going unnoticed, and it feels good to hear an occasional thank you at the end of the day. And too many times, folks don't think to say thank you. Two teeny, tiny little words that pack a powerful punch. So say them and make someone smile, and you will. It's funny, those two little words can really make somebody feel good. And yes, caregivers need to thank their survivors too. You know, it's a two-way street here, folks. I thank David all the time for fighting through three life-threatening brain surgeries to stay with me. Of course, I did whisper to him right before each surgery that I'd never forgive him if he didn't come back to me. I like to think a little guilt goes a long way. But really, I do thank David when he does the dishes at night. I thank him when he does the laundry each week. And on the three occasions that he took out the trash, I thanked him with a resounding kiss. You know, so I think it's so important for us all to be thankful and let other people know that you're thankful. So you can have your gratitude, but you still have to share it with others. So Jamie and Barbara, what are your thoughts about survivors and caregivers showing their gratitude to each other? And how do you show your gratitude to your family and friends who support you? Barbara, you have any comments on that?
I'm a very giving person. So I'm used to giving, not receiving.
Uh-huh.
So whenever someone does anything for me, I go well over the top to show gratitude. It really touches me, for anyone to do anything for me. Unfortunately, and with my ex-husband and I, the brain injury and everything, we just had a communication problem with our marriage to begin with. And of course the brain injury did not improve the relationship. But we are to this day really good friends. And we communicate better now than we did before. And you do have to do a lot of thank yous. And it is a lot of the give and the take.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even just writing down, like say if you do have, well, Jamie coming along with her being engaged and all that, it's the little things that you can do too. If you pack a lunch, put a little smiley note in there.
Yeah.
You know, do just some things. Buy, when you're coming home from the store, buy him that special soda or buy him that special candy bar. You say, I was thinking of you today. Sending him that special text that says, I love you. It's the little things that mean the greatest.
Right. You are so right there. When you brought up the lunch thing, it brought to mind that I used to do that all the time when I would pack my lunches for my kids. And I think even for David, when I was packing lunches for him, I'd always put a note on the bag. Have a good day. I love you. You know, big smiley face, all that. Or just a little note in the bag, you know. And that was always, you know, it was fun. And David, every morning before his brain injury, every morning before he'd go to work, he would leave a little note, a post-it note on the counter for me because he would leave earlier than I. And so it would be like, you know, again, just have a good day. I love you. Or it was H-A-G-D is what he would write. Have a good day. So just little things like that. And you know what? They are. And you know that I have every one of them
I kept them. Yeah. They're in a folder somewhere. I don't know where they are because we made two moves since then, but I know I have them. So, yeah, they are really important. And they're small. They're little things that you do, but they're big in that way because it doesn't cost anybody any money to do anything like that. No. It doesn't cost you but a few moments of time. And frankly, every time I would go out, not every time, but a lot of times I'd go out shopping and I'd be out for a while and I'd bring him home a candy bar or bring him home something. Say, so I just, you know, wanted to share something with you, you know. So it's little. It's just little, but it makes you feel good. And you know what? It doesn't only make the receiver feel good. It made me feel good. So, yeah, those are good points to bring up. And I know, Jamie, you have some thoughts, too, on this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention is besides just what you say, actions speak louder than words. And so just my experience before COVID when I would travel to speaking engagements and I was gone, when I came home, Reggie would pick me up and he'd have flowers for me. And
aww.
I would have gotten him something. I don't know exactly. Every time it would be something different, but something just from the place that I was. Just a little random thing, like I was thinking of you and just added to our house. But those little gestures and saying it is powerful as well. So I said actions speak louder than words, but words are also very powerful. And so, you know, take the effort to say thank you because sometimes we forget to thank the people that are important. And as Barbara has mentioned and Donna knows, the amount of support you receive after a brain injury from so many different people is so valuable. And I know in my experience, my family, especially my mom and Jeannie, as well as the rest of my family, were so important to me for so long. It was years and years. And Donna is still very, very active for her husband and caregiver support, and to really reach out and thank those people. And I'm just speaking from a survivor, from my point of view, to thank the caregivers, but really taking the effort to not just say thank you, but, you know, maybe it's even just finding something like, thank you, this song made me think of you, and tell them and acknowledge stuff.
Exactly, exactly. And it's so easy to do, but people don't think about doing it, you know, and that's our purpose here tonight is to remind you that there are so many simple, easy ways to make someone else. And it doesn't mean you have to have a brain injury either, frankly. These are good points just for anybody in the world to acknowledge and to do and to make somebody else feel good, you know, just do it. And then gratitude can also spread farther from your front door and your family and your friends. You know, David and I are always thankful when folks offer little actions of help to us. Opening a door to a store or a restaurant is really difficult when I'm trying to help David balance and we're pushing through together. So I'm always grateful when someone opens the door for us. It seems such a small gesture for them, but to us it's huge, and we always let our helpers know how grateful we are. We give them a huge hug. Now, well, I don't actually do that, but I want to. I mean, I really do want to. But I do thank them profusely. You know, we want them to know that their seemingly small gesture was really appreciated, and it's our small way of helping to make others aware of helping others. And I think that is so important to do, letting the people really know that you're so grateful makes them realize that their little thing that they did really was important. And it will probably settle in their brain and they'll do it again for somebody else and for somebody else.
Yes.
And if we just keep pushing this forward, but it starts with us, the people that need the help. You know, when somebody and sometimes you have to just ask for the help. You know, people sometimes don't have any clue that, you know, as they watch me struggling to open the door and they're waiting patiently behind me to get in or waiting to get out patiently and they don't even bother to help. And I go like, you've got to be kidding me.
Don't you see the struggle that I'm having? And they don't, I guess. They really don't. So at that point, that's when you should, and I don't do this, but I think I'm going to from now on if I ever get out of the house after COVID. But I think that I should be saying, do you mind helping me? Do you mind holding the door? You know, and they'll realize that I do need help. They'll be happy to give it because most people don't mind helping. You know, that's just our human nature, most people, I say. So, yeah. So I think that's something else we have to do and to show, you know, to let other people realize that we're grateful to them for any help that they give to us. So, yeah. Okay, so there was one other question I didn't ask it, and I think I can ask it here, just going through my notes to see what, because I had to skip around a little bit. Oh, okay, yeah, this is a good one actually to end on. The question was about the whole conversation that we were having tonight. I think reminds me of our large family Thanksgiving dinner, and you'll probably relate to this, if not personally, probably through you've seen it on TV or movies or something. But it reminds me of our large family Thanksgiving dinner. We always get together except the last year, where we all sit around the table each year proclaiming what we are thankful for while the turkey and the mashed potatoes get cold and the gravy gels. But despite the poor timing, it is a good time to reflect on your life and consciously think about what makes you thankful in your life. You know, that's one of the times we all really do kind of think of Thanksgiving. We all kind of do think that one day of the year when we should be doing it almost, you know, every day or several times a day. But we definitely do think about it on that day. So my thankfulness never seems to change from year to year, and neither does David's. We're very predictable. But we are always ever grateful for each other's love and devotion. You know, I mean, that's basically my biggest thing. I'm grateful. I could say that every day. I'm grateful for David staying with me, David not leaving me on the three times on the surgery tables. So, yeah, I'm very grateful that we're together and we're spending more of our life. We've had 16 years extra because he tried to bow out three times, and I wasn't too happy with that. So, yeah. So that's one of the things that we are always grateful for, and for our love, devotion. But if you were given only one thing to choose to be grateful for, Barbara, what would it be?
God.
For
it
why?
It would be God. Because he is the creator. I'm spiritual. I feel he was there beside me when I got sick. It's been through his guidance and his support that has gotten me where I am today. There's been a lot of prayers and a lot of prayers that have been answered. I've done a lot of praying. He has helped me stay more positive. He's a lot of my strength.
And I think that a lot of people do rely on their religion, and that gets them through. And I think that that's great for people that have that feeling. And so thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure that there are a lot of folks that will say the very same thing as you did. And Jamie, how about you?
For me right now, I'd say what I'm most grateful for that happened in April is getting engaged to my best friend. And, you know, we've climbed a lot of alternative peaks, reconstructing our house together, and pretty excited for all the things we're going to do in the future.
Aww.
Good. You know, yeah, and you've got a bright future coming up. I mean, you know, that wedding cake and all that is going to be so cool. So, yeah, I think everybody has their things that they're grateful for, and they can change. They can change in every day. You might still have your primary grateful. I'm going to still be grateful for David, I'm sure, always. I'm sure, Barbara, you're still going to be grateful for God. And Jamie, of course, you're going to be grateful for your new life changing. But we can add more. You don't have to be grateful for just one thing, folks. So think about that and start, you know, and start, tallying them up. Get those things down. Write them into your journal, your grateful gratitude journal, or write them in and put them in that little post-its or little pieces of paper and stick them in the jar. Do that and see what happens. I think you're going to find a lot of positivity flowing from your life, and I think that will be wonderful. Absolutely. So on that note, and looking at the time, I'm going to have to say thank you to Jamie Crane Mosey and to Barbara Wilson for sharing all of your thoughts with us tonight. And I think we had a really great chat about why it's important to be have an attitude with gratitude. And you can learn more about both Jamie and Barbara at my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. And Jamie, I think you have a blog. You want to put it out there in our website address for us?
Sure. The website is mocrazystrong, mocrazystrong, strong.com. And, yeah, okay. Like I mentioned earlier, my podcast is on Apple Podcasts. Life gets more crazy.
So everyone, you can always find Jamie out there. She's on the web. Let me just put her name in. You'll find her. Barbara, do you have any site you want to acknowledge over here?
No, I'm good. I'm fine.
Okay.
Okay.
Again, I want to invite you to read the survivor interviews and the caregiver interviews on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. There is a place called Itty Bitty Giant Steps, and I haven't had many Itty Bitty Giant Steps lately, so folks, send them in to me. If you have an accomplishment you'd like to share, big or small, send it to me. We'd like to share it with the world. Let's give you a little shout out there. There's a section called Guest Blogger, so if anyone wants to write a post, send it to me. You can send it at donnaodonnellfigurski@gmail.com. Let's see. You can find out more about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale, at donnaodonnellfigurski.com. And there's a new section on that blog, and you have to kind of find it. There are three little lines up on the left. Click on that, and then there are subtitles. Look for Bookity Blog. Click on that, and you'll find a lot of fun stories there. Oh, and besides, I just got an honorable mention for one of my children's book stories that I am getting ready for submission. So check it out. You get to be the first to read it. Let's see. What else can I say? In 2 weeks or more, no, I think it's 2 weeks, 16th of May, I will be interviewing Danielle Skranak. I don't know how to say her name exactly, but she will be talking about how she had her brain injury as a member of the military. And it's a very interesting story, how she went from the military to a beauty queen in Arizona. And now she's working in another job that is really, you know, pretty neat over in another state. So anyhow, actually it's not a state, but I'm not going to tell you where. Anyhow, so on that note, I'm going to have to say the clock is ticking up to 6:50 Pacific time, and we're going to have to say goodbye. So if you liked my show, tell 10 of your friends. And if you hated it, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. So, again, don't forget to tune in to the other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio Network. And we will stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you, Jamie, and thank you, Barbara. I enjoyed this, talking to you immensely.
You're welcome.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.